Greetings, everyone, and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service in the public interest, and I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally on 29 AM and FM radio stations 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 70 countries worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit my webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. The Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law news and current events, so stay tuned for tonight's special report on the dollar's coming collapse right after this message. In 1787, the writers of our Constitution put in this clause at Article 1, Section 10. It says, no state shall make anything but gold or silver coin a tender in payment of debt. That clause follows the biblical injunction on just weights and balances that we see in Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. Now, private business is carried on in gold and silver coin, but public business is conducted in commercial paper like stocks, bonds, and Federal Reserve notes. Well, back in 1965, Congress told us that there is no difference in the value of gold and silver coin, or clad coin, or currency. And that's true when you're dealing with banks, government, and commercial industries. But out here in the real market, that's not true, because there's a 7-to-1 difference in the purchasing power of gold over paper, and a 7-to-1 difference in the taxes due on the paper. Now, God and our founding fathers didn't give us gold and silver coin for no good purpose. They knew that as a matter of law, gold and silver coin was absolutely necessary for us to deal in order for us to establish our property rights. Well, neither did our Congress and politicians take our gold and silver coin away from us for no good reason either. They knew, and they knew full well back in 1933, that in order to subjugate a free people, they would first have to take away their gold and silver coin to take away the people's right to property and to destroy their property rights. Now, if we intend to regain our rights, duties, and capacities, then we must first regain our property and property rights, because property is the legal foundation for all of our liberties. Now, let me teach you how to do just that. This business school is now on compact disc for adult homeschoolers. For more information about my private business school, call and order my free general law CD package. That's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, and best of all, it's free of charge, and you can call and order yours right now. The number to call is 417-273-4967. And remember, my business school is also available on compact disc for adult home study. Now, if you're online, just go to your website. It's georgegordon.org. Click onto the email and send me an email request for your free general law CD package. That's georgegordon.org, or call direct 417-273-4967. All right, tonight's program, it comes from The Money Changer. The Money Changer is available from Franklin Sanders, who publishes The Money Changer monthly. You can order it at Post Office Box 178 in West Point, Tennessee. James Turk and Franklin Sanders did an interview on the dollar's coming collapse. We watched the 6 o'clock news, and Dan Rather and Tom Brokaw tell us about how the economy is rebounding. We watch Lou Dobbs or Wall Street Week on PBS and CNN, and they tell us a different story than what we see in reality out here on the street. Prices are escalating. We call that inflation, but we're told that inflation is well under 3%. That's not what I'm experiencing here in Missouri, and we want to give you the other side of the story. The conservative view of the economy is something different than what we're hearing from the Wall Street bankers and the liberal news media. and particularly the politicians, the two skull and bones men running for president. Well, James Turk and Franklin Sanders did an interview in the Money Changer, and it goes like this. Since at least the New Deal and the succession of Roosevelt and all of his monetary inflationary tricks, people have been predicting that the dollar would collapse. Now, aren't you ashamed to come along 70 years later and predict again that the dollar is going to collapse? James Turk's response is, by any logical interpretation, the dollar has already collapsed. Today's dollar only purchases 5 cents of what it purchased in 1930, 10 cents of what it purchased in 1960, and 50 cents of what it purchased in 1980. So inflation has already brought the dollar to an ongoing collapse. The sound money people have been warning about this through the decades. The dollar is no longer an effective form of currency. And that raises another question. Will the dollar's problems become more severe? Will the 5 cents that the dollar is still worth collapse so that it's worth absolutely nothing? And that's where it becomes a bit more troublesome in terms of projecting and looking into the future. Can this decades-long situation continue, or must it end in some cataclysm? In our view, it must come to an end in a cataclysm, and that's the way we lay it out in my book, Money Changer. But isn't the word collapse misleading? The people who manage the dollar, our Federal Reserve System and the Treasury, have managed the collapse from 1934 until 2004. Now, that's 70 years, so that the economy did not collapse along with the dollar. Now, can you really call that a collapse? And also, what's to prevent their managing the monetary system a bit longer, through this decade, for instance, even if it should turn out that the losses, as I expect, at least 75% of its value in this decade, and it's already lost nearly 30% from February of 2002 to March of 2004, it still won't disrupt the economy too terribly, will it? James Turk's response. He said, well, let's look at the first part of your question, the claim that the economy hasn't collapsed. You are widening the point that I was making earlier about the dollar collapsing in terms of purchasing power. When you bring the economy into the discussion, you have to ask yourself another question. Are people better off now than they were 20 or 30 years ago? Looking at real wealth and adjusting for the dollar's debasement, people are less wealthy today than they were 20 or 30 years ago. Incomes are lower today than they were 20 or 30 years ago, adjusted for inflation. And partly because the dollar has been debased, and partly because people take home less money after taxes. By any logical measure, I don't think you're as well off as you were in 1960 or 1950, when the dollar and their problems weren't as severe as they've become in recent decades. But there's more to that question. We have created a mountain of debt, a debt bubble. And these bubbles always pop. We have mortgaged our future trying to maintain living standards by debasing our currency and borrowing. This is totally unsustainable, and it will ultimately bring about the dollar's total collapse. Money Changer. But the Federal Reserve and the Treasury have managed the collapse. That's what they do, and they have done very well over the past 70 years. They are, indeed, crisis managers. They exist to manage the debasement of the dollar so that this infection does not give the whole economy a fever resulting in death. Would you agree with that? Turk responded yes, and as a clear result of their managing an unsustainable situation, we have less and less freedom. The Patriot Act just presents the latest example. Now take a look at U.S. financial history. They continue to erode and encumber our freedom. Why? Well, because they recognize that the present system is not sustainable and that they are trying to keep the bubble in the air. Money changer. You claim the present system is not sustainable and that Alan Greenspan says it is. George Bush says today's economy is sustainable. James Turk's response, well, are they going to tell you that it's not sustainable? Are they going to tell you the truth and say the collapse is just around the corner? We don't know how long we can keep this charade intact. Money changer. No, but they have 70 years of success to argue on their side. What makes it different this time? In the dollar's darkest hours of 1980, when gold hit $850 an ounce and silver peaked at more than $50 an ounce, they pushed interest rates to up over 20%. Well, yes, it's a crisis, but we'll muddle through this one too. They've been muddling through since 1934. What is to prevent the government and the Federal Reserve from muddling through this time? And what specific things will make the dollar collapse this time? And by collapse, I don't mean erode or even erode quickly, but I mean collapse in the sense that currency collapsed in Germany in 1923 or currency collapsed in Argentina in 2002. Turk. Well, that is exactly what I envision for the dollar, a total collapse, just like we saw in Germany in 1923 and Argentina in 2002. Now, to answer your question, we have to consider both supply and demand. In recent decades, demand for the dollar has been more or less fairly consistent. As the financial bubble has been inflated and the debt mountain has been built, people have continued to demand the dollar. They still use it today for their day-to-day transactions. But what we saw happening in Argentina and Germany in the 1920s, eventually, in a very short period of time, people realized that the hollow promises that they were using for currency were not worth what the people had previously valued them to be valued at or to be worth. Then began the flight from the currency. The demand for those currencies began to drop dramatically. In a long-term time frame, you could say almost overnight. And it was really over a period of weeks and months. People moved out of that currency as quickly as they could into other alternative currencies. Demand for the dollar will ultimately drop for essentially the same reasons. The same reasons that the peso and the Reichsmark dropped. They were fiat currencies oversupplied to the market. Now we're going to have to take a break here in a minute, but let me make an observation. The dollar in 1930 was valued at $20 to the ounce of gold. Today, it's about $420 to the ounce of gold. The purchasing power of our money has eroded so that a gold $20 double eagle will buy today everything that it bought back in 1930 and maybe a little more. A $20 bill from 1930 will buy about 5 cents on the dollar of what it would purchase back in 1930. Well, hang on. We'll be back with more on the collapse of the dollar right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in the United States and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, please go to my website at georgegordon.org. The Law School teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. And the law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by prearrangement only. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Tonight's report, The Dollar's Coming Collapse, is taken from an interview by Franklin Sanders and James Turk. James Turk is the publisher of the Free Market Gold and Money Report, and it sells for $220 a year for 20 newsletters. You can order a subscription from Post Office Box 5002, North Conway, New Hampshire, 03860. And you can learn all about gold money, the electronic gold-backed currency, at www.goldmoney.com. The Money Changer is published monthly by Franklin Sanders. You can order a copy, or you can order a subscription. From Post Office Box 178, West Point, Tennessee, the zip code 38486. Or you can call and make an inquiry at 888-218-9226. Again, that's area code 888-218-9226. James Turk made this observation. He said, too many dollars are sloshing around the global economy, and all that it takes is a little break in confidence. And then when people understand that the dollar is not worth the paper it's printed on, there are a lot of hollow promises out there backing our dollar. And that will lead to the flight from the currency that will ultimately bring the dollar down. But it's the same outcome for every fiat currency. That's the point that Americans simply do not get. There is no logical reason why the dollar should end up any differently than any other fiat currency, past, present, or future. The Money Changer. But help me see the unseen. In 1923, Germany, the people of Germany, had already suffered through the inflation of World War I. They had seen their currency lose value as prices rose 800%. They caught on. That catching on was necessary to precipitate the flight from the currency. And in Argentina, in the decades of the 1980s and 90s, they had three different currencies, if I'm not mistaken. It may have been four. I can't keep up with all of the fiat money of South America. All Latin America has a century-long tradition of monetary instability. In the United States, the last two generations have now grown up without seeing gold in circulation, and the last generation has grown up without seeing silver coin in circulation. Since 1971, the whole world has been on a fiat standard. Every currency has been inconvertible, backed by nothing. So why would American confidence break now? They don't know anything else. They have only known a regime of inflation and ever-depreciating dollars. What will put the idea in the average American's mind now that they have to flee out of dollars? James Turk's response. Well, that will trigger the flight from the dollar. We can't really predict that. It could be some geopolitical event, some domestic financial event, a bankruptcy of Freddie Mac or Fannie Mae. We just don't know what the specific trigger will be. But look at the overall picture of what the dollar is today and then ask yourself this question. Do I want to prepare for this coming event by moving my assets out of dollars and into other alternatives, other currencies, precious metals, tangible assets? Never mind asking what specific event will start the flight from the dollar. Where we stand today in this country is not unlike where Russia stood in the Soviet Union in the late 1980s. If you had been an average Russian in the late 1980s, and if you had possessed the terrific foresight to say that in 2 years the Russian ruble will collapse and the Soviet Union will be history, I think the average Russian would have laughed at you. And you know what he would have said? The government will never let that happen. And that's exactly what Americans say today. They believe, and they say, that the government would never allow that to happen. So what do Americans say today? Exactly the same thing that the Russians were saying in the late 1980s. The government will never let it happen. But the reality is that the market is bigger than the government. Now, truth can be hid from the market for only so long. And we've been hiding the truth for 70 years. We've been creating illusions of prosperity, while in reality we've been consuming infrastructure and building a debt mountain and inflating our currency. The debt mountain is ultimately going to be the problem that causes the dollar to collapse. That's what happened in Argentina in 2002. Argentina defaulted on their massive debt and couldn't make their payments. America is on the threshold of default. The money changer. But Jim, in the Soviet case, the collapse of the currency brought with it the collapse of the whole governmental system. In Germany and in Argentina, the same thing happened. Now, thinking back to 1720, it is very unusual for a currency collapse to be accompanied by the collapse of a government or a regime. Do you envision that kind of confusion and collapse in the United States? James Turk. No, I disagree with your premise. In Argentina and also in Germany, they still had basically the same form of government. They just brought in new people to run that government. The Soviet Union was a little different because it was the most unsustainable command economy in history. What will hopefully happen here in the United States is that we will return to the constitutional basics that requires the money of this country to be gold and silver coin as mandated by our Constitution in Article 1, Section 10. The money changer. Well, I saw that in your book, but having fought that issue through the courts, I think that the elite that presently rules our country founds all of its power on creating money out of thin air. Why would they give that up and return to the constitutional standard of gold and silver? Turk. Well, I hope that the American people will demand it. The money changer. Do you really believe that? James Turk. Yes, I think the American people are wise enough to demand it. The economic problem that will result from a dollar collapse will cause people to recognize that our heritage, where our roots are, and why our country became great in the first place, was bound and founded upon gold and silver coin. Sound money is the key element of that enshrined success that came from our Constitution. The money changer. You could almost say the sound money was the reason that the Constitutional Convention was called. James Turk's response, yes, I agree. Because of the memory of what had just occurred during the Revolutionary War with fiat currency. Our founding fathers learned their lessons in dealing with fiat currencies, and they did not want their posterity to suffer the same misery. So they enshrined sound money in Article 1, Section 8 and 10 of our Constitution. Sound money. And it worked for nearly 145 years, counting 1934 as the final end of our sound money system in the United States. The money changer. But not everyone at the Constitutional Convention favored sound money, did they? Turk. No, they didn't. Many were in favor of sound money, but there was a disagreement. First, let's define what is sound money anyway. Is it gold and silver coin only? Or is it gold and silver coin with a parallel fractional reserve banking system? At the Constitutional Convention, there were two schools of thought. The Jeffersonian school of thought maintained that gold and silver coin should be the only money in the country. That was ultimately put into place by Andrew Jackson some 40 years later when he defeated the banking interests in 1836. On the other side at the Constitutional Convention was Alexander Hamilton, who felt that there was a need for fractional reserve banking, and after Jackson's victory many years later, the fractional reserve banking school eventually was put out of business, but only for a short time until the Civil War. The fractional reserve banking school eventually won the war. Its victory was so complete, in fact, that now, today, we have only fractional reserve banking, with no gold and no silver coin, and only a fiat money system. To make that fractional reserve banking possible, we have created this fiat currency as well. Money changer. Well, which is necessary to make the fractional reserve system to survive, is it not? Turk, yes. Money changer. Well, yes, but even during the Constitutional Convention, there were people who were not just friends of fiat money or fractional reserve banking, like Hamilton. Some went even further. They wanted the state to just print as much money as it wanted. Turk. Well, the crazy monetary thinking appears in every generation, and people who believe the state can create wealth by printing up pieces of paper and then forcing people to accept those pieces of paper as money. That thinking was definitely in the minority, particularly since the Revolutionary War experience had discredited fiat currency so thoroughly. The money changer. So you think this crisis in dollar confidence, will bring about the same understanding in the public's mind today? Turk. Yes, that's my expectation, but also my hope. I'd rather not think about the other alternatives. The money changer. Well, you cover those other alternatives at the back of your book, and I really appreciated that you did not leave it up in the air, how the final collapse will be dealt with and the alternatives for reform. So many people say, yes, we ought to have gold and silver currency, but then, after all, there is no way we can reinstitute it because there's not enough gold and silver or some such silly thing. At the end of your book, you and John Rubino show three different scenarios for the collapse's outcome and a return to sound money. Turk. Well, thanks for saying that. We tried to make a realistic assessment and hope that those scenarios will provide food for thought and help guide the public in this discussion when the inevitable collapse does occur. Well, we got to take a break here, so hang on a second and we'll come back with more on the money changer and the collapse of the dollar right after this. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. Tonight's report on the dollar's coming collapse will continue right after this. You know, under the terms of a contract called the Old Covenant, negotiated by Moses out at Mount Sinai, you and I are entitled to 33 articulable benefits. Benefits such as rain in due season, multiplied gold, silver, herds, flocks, and great wealth. Well, George Bush has told us that what Americans want is jobs, jobs, jobs. But that's not what George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Ben Franklin, Moses, or God had in mind when they wrote the Constitution, the Bill of Rights, and the Ten Commandments. All of these authorities recognize that real wealth is measured in land, cattle, property, gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. That's called property, not jobs, jobs, jobs. And that's because there's no money in employment. The money is in private business and sales, not in public business or jobs, jobs, jobs. Now it's time that you cashed in on your inheritance and learned how to collect those benefits of the Old Covenant contract, and to collect those benefits in gold, silver, wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil, in real property instead of credit, debt, usury, inflation, and worthless paper. Now, if you'd like to learn how to do just that, why don't you call for information on my CD Home School for Adults and order my free General Law CD package at the same time. Now, that's a 4-hour commentary on the law in general. It's informative, it's entertaining, it's educational, it's free of charge, and you can call right now. The number to call is 417-273-4967. If you're online, just go to the website georgegordon.org. Click onto the email machine and send me an email request for that free General Law CD package. Remember, that's georgegordon.org, or call direct, 417-273-4967. All right, we're looking at an interview by Franklin Sanders of James Turk. James Turk is the author of The Coming Collapse of the Dollar and How to Profit from It. And Turk is also the publisher of The Free Market Gold and Money Report. It costs $220 a year. It's a newsletter. 20 letters per year. Post Office Box 5002, North Conway, New Hampshire, 03860. And you can learn all about gold money, that's electronic gold-backed currency, at www.goldmoney.com. The Money Changer is published by Franklin Sanders, Post Office Box 178, West Point, Tennessee, 38486. Or you can call direct, 888-218-9226. Again, that's 888-218-9226. 9226. Continuing with the interview, the Money Changer asks, make a connection for me. Why does the mounting business, government, and consumer debt in the United States make any difference anyway? As long as the Federal Reserve continues to pump out new money, cheapening the overall value of the debt, and providing new money to pay the interest, why can't the debt burden be borne? It has already reached ridiculous, hardly conceivable levels. Consumer debt in the United States, not counting mortgage debt, is about $18,000 per person. Who would have ever imagined a debt like that? Now, I've talked to bankruptcy lawyers who tell me it's not at all unusual for their clients to owe $60,000 in credit card debt alone. The debt bubble has already blown higher and lasted longer than any sane person could have expected, but it still hasn't collapsed. Now, why do you maintain that the debt is unsustainable? James Turk. Well, if you cheapen the debt, you cheapen the currency. So keep in mind that for every obligation, there has to be an asset. Now, many of those obligations circulating have been turned into currency by the banking system. So cheapening the assets, which are debt on the balance sheets of the bank, also cheapens the liabilities on the balance sheet of the banks, which are the fiat currency that is circulating as money today. Money Changer. But we've been doing that for the past 70 years, and it hasn't collapsed yet. What is it about the debt burden now that makes it unsustainable? James Turk. Well, it's a combination of two things. The magnitude and where that debt is now owed. When I was growing up in the 1950s and 60s, the federal debt was growing. And people used to say that it really didn't matter because we owed all of that debt to ourselves, implying that it was all owed within the United States. Now we owe debts all over the world. We now owe $4 trillion to the rest of the world, and we are living on the good graces of the rest of the world to finance our standard of living. That's what creates the vulnerability. That, too, is what Warren Buffett offers to justify diversifying out of the U.S. dollar and taking a cash position in other currencies. About 50% of Buffett's $35 billion in cash is now invested in foreign currencies, according to his last quarterly report. Does Warren Buffett know something that the rest of us don't know? Warren Buffett is saying that we have squandered much of our financial capacity, and as a consequence, we are vulnerable to what the rest of the world thinks about the dollar and what the rest of the world thinks about our debt position. The money changer. I keep thinking about the surprise. You're telling me that there is an upper limit. A point comes when you cannot make your payments any longer. James Turk. Well, more importantly, at some point in time, the demand for the dollar will change. Even though they still need dollars for day-to-day transactions, people will put their liquidity into other resources. And we are seeing this occur even a little bit presently because the supply of dollars has not been growing very rapidly. Still, the dollar has been dropping on foreign exchange markets. Now, why is that? Well, it tells us that demand for dollars is not growing as rapidly as the supply of new dollars coming into the marketplace. So we are already starting to see the early stages of the dollar's collapse. Money changer. Well, when do you think this will occur? By 2010, 2015, or 2005? Can you give us a date? James Turk. Well, my own assessment is that it will happen within 3 years, maybe 5 years at most. But the important point is not when it will happen, but what you do now for yourself to benefit yourself and your own financial position. You have to prepare your strategies and then act and then plan for that eventuality today. Now, let's assume the dollar system survives another 10 or 15 years. If you are prepared, you really don't care when it happens because you have peace of mind knowing that you're ready if and when it does happen. And that's the key. Are you ready or not? Money changer. Well, how do you prepare? James Turk. We outline a lot of strategies in our book, and I don't want to get into those in detail because of a time constraint here in this interview, because some of these are very complex. But there is a basic rule of thumb, and that is minimize your dollar assets and minimize the dollars that are owed to you. Instead, go for precious metals, strong currencies, and some European currencies are stronger than the dollar, but none of them are perfect. And then tangible assets of all kinds, like wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. Money changer. An investor cannot protect himself by going from dollars into yen or dollars into euros. Is that what you're telling us? James Turk. That's true. You see, holding euros or holding yen is better than holding dollars. But that doesn't answer your ultimate problem, because ultimately, if the dollar lands in trouble, all of the other currencies will be in trouble as well. Neither the euro nor the yen is a viable long-term currency, because they too are fiat currencies. And they confront all of the same weaknesses that the dollar has. But for the moment, their problems are not as severe as the dollar's problems. Money changer. Well, in their essence, they differ from the dollar only in the symbol that represents them. Turk. Yes, that's true. The economic conditions are a bit different in those countries, but at the end of the day, they're still fiat currencies. My complaint is against all fiat currencies of all stripes. Money changer. Since you've dealt in the gold market for nearly 30 years, you are well aware how narrow the door is into the world of gold investments. So when a dollar crisis precipitates, how will precious metals markets behave? Turk. Gold and silver prices will rise dramatically. Money changer. Very quickly? Turk. Yes, very quickly. When the rush out of dollars finally comes, it'll be like emptying Hoover Dam through a garden hose. The garden hose presents a very limited opportunity to get gold and silver, because they will just continue to bid up the price. Now, when you look at gold and silver now, from any historical perspective, they're extremely cheap. And month after month, I have been recommending that people accumulate gold and silver, especially in coin form, in an unleveraged way, a safe way. Physicals. Hold the coin itself. Diversify your gold and silver assets and make sure that you control them either through allocated storage or physical possession. Money changer. There are four ways to hold gold: physical metal, electronic currency, stocks, and futures and options. Is it practical for a person to put all of his assets into gold and silver using those four means? James Turk. Well, it's hard to make a sweeping generalization, because everyone's situation and temperament is unique. My years of experience in investment management, banking, and everything else has taught me that if there is one right answer, it's diversification. You put your eggs in a lot of different baskets. But I would like to make a distinction. You see, physical metal and digital currencies like gold money are different from stocks, which again are different from futures and different from options. First off, futures and options are paper. They're simply derivatives. You don't really own gold. You just own someone's promise to pay you gold at some point in the future. That's just like unallocated storage, or what I also call pool accounts and certificates. They're just promises to pay. They're not real physical metal. So I would avoid those, because gold and silver are the bedrock of your portfolio, and you don't want to take any chances with your bedrock portfolio of gold and silver coin. Stocks are different from both of the other two, because stocks interpose all of the risks of being in business. They aren't really gold and silver. They're companies with management, and they're subject to acts of God. Stocks are an investment, not money. So whether in physical or digital form, gold and silver are money. Now, that makes them different from all other assets. Now, when you look at a portfolio, you normally think stock, bonds, cash. Well, gold and silver are, or should be, your cash. Well, hang on. We'll take a quick break, and we'll be right back with more on the dollar's coming collapse when we return, right after this break. All right, you're listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week in both the United States and worldwide on the Internet. For more information about the Gordon Law School and The Law Hour, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org. the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school and is open to individuals by pre-arrangement only. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact discs, so for more information, just go to the homeschooling page on the website at georgegordon.org. The Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. All right, we're looking at the Money Changer. Remember, the Money Changer is available. I recommend the Money Changer and the Privateer. I think that those are two of the best newsletters in the country. There are many, and this is an interview with a newsletter writer. The Money Changer is available from Franklin Sanders at Post Office Box 178, West Point, Tennessee, the zip code 38486. The telephone number 888-218-9226. Again, that's Franklin Sanders, the Money Changer, Post Office Box 178, West Point, Tennessee, the zip code 38486. Or you can call and make an inquiry at 888-218-9226. The Money Changer. Well, I have to explain that over and over because people don't understand that gold and silver are currencies that compete and they compete with all others. Now, when they think of currencies, they think dollar, yen, or euro. They don't think dollar, yen, euro, gold, and silver. So without thinking in those terms, you can never understand what's really happening with money. So explain to us, if you would please, about digital gold, because this is a new player on the scene. Digital gold didn't exist in 1980, or perhaps the outcome of the currency crisis then might have been very, very different. James Turk. Yes, we haven't used gold as currency for a long, long time in this country. Back in the 19th century, gold coins used to circulate and were used in business. In the early 20th century, some gold coins circulated alongside paper gold certificates, but for the past 70 years, there's been no gold currency. Digital gold is a new 21st century form of gold currency. Digital gold enables gold to circulate as currency without any of the impediments. You own gold sitting in the vault. In gold money's case, the vault is in London. So you transact your business online by clicking ownership of the gold from your account to someone else's account. The gold never leaves the vault, but it stays in allocated storage insured by Lloyd's of London. The ownership changes from you to another person the moment you click it out of your account. It's like passing a gold coin from hand to hand, but you do it online, anywhere in the world, anytime, day or night. Money Changer. Well, it sounds like a good idea, but what sort of volume is there? If I had a gold money account, where could I spend it? Turk. Well, there is a chicken and an egg approach. Merchants want a lot of users, and users want a lot of merchants. So we're building up the gold money base. We now have about $27 million worth of gold in gold money. That's about 12,000 accounts with people in over 100 countries. As merchants see that more and more people using gold money to buy gold because it's inexpensive and convenient, more and more merchants are starting to accept gold money in payment. So a lot of people are using it for international transactions. A small businessman buying supplies worth $3,000 a month from Hong Kong can go to his bank and pay $50 to send a wire transfer, and if he's lucky, the wire will get into Hong Kong 3 days later. With gold money, he makes the payment of $3,000 in gold coin instantaneously, and it costs less than a dollar. So we're finding a lot of peer-to-peer payment being made with gold money online. Money Changer. There are several purveyors of gold money. At one time, there were 20 or 30. Turk. Well, there's only one purveyor of gold money. there are many imitators, and a couple of them have failed. All of them basically infringe the patents that we have on the process, but more importantly, they haven't gone about the whole business very, very wisely. They haven't established the governing procedures, and they haven't created the control mechanism to provide the insurance of integrity that customers must have to know that their gold is safe. So before you look at any of these other gold programs, ask yourself, first of all, is your gold safe? With gold money, I'm sure you're going to answer yes to that question. So when you look at the alternatives, you'll have a lot of question marks. Money changer. What about silver? As a bimetallist, I know that I'm in the company of maybe two or three other people on the face of the earth. Still, I was a little bit miffed by your emphasis on gold. How you think silver will perform over the course of this dollar collapse? James Turk. Well, I believe that silver will do very well. The fundamentals for silver are very, very bullish, and it looks like we will continue to see what we have seen for the past few years. Silver outperforming gold. And I'm very, very bullish on silver. Now, silver as an asset will show considerable appreciation, and that's why I'm very bullish on silver. But is silver going to have a role as currency? And I think that's probably a more important question to ask. Well, in the physical world, it may, although only time will tell. But in the digital world, I don't believe that it will have any role at all. And from a currency point of view, silver, in the last 100 years, was the subsidiary coinage used to make the small change. It wasn't practical to make gold coins that small. So in the digital world, that is no longer an issue. With gold money, for example, you can spend as little as a penny's worth of gold, so there's no need for a subsidiary coinage in a digital world. Once you digitize gold, you can divide it up into amounts as small as you want to. So I don't see silver necessarily having a digital currency role, but that doesn't necessarily mean that silver will not perform well out in the real marketplace. In fact, I think silver will outperform gold there. Why am I more a monometallist than a bimetallist? Well, that's because it has a huge consumer and industrial demand. You see, silver is much more volatile than gold. It's a much smaller marketplace than gold, and that's why, in my mind, silver is not as good to use as money as gold is. Gold's demand is almost all monetary demand, whereas silver has some monetary demand, but primarily it's an industrial metal. Money changer. Well, I understand that, but a fundamental question of valuation underlies the question of bimetallism or monometallism. And that fundamental question is echoed in the Latin proverb, who will guard the guards themselves? What regulates the value of gold? The fact that an ounce of gold buys 16 ounces of silver. What makes an ounce of silver valuable? 16 ounces of silver will buy 1 ounce of gold. The correspondence of value between these two metals defines the value of each. The alternative is a monometallic system where the value of gold is defined in terms of paper money. 1 ounce of gold buys 35 paper dollars or 400 paper dollars. Without silver in the system to validate valuation, then gold will be valued in terms of a paper currency, some currency somewhere in the world. And as we've seen in the last 100 tragic years, that is the camel's nose of fiat money, fiat currency entering our tent. It's a crucial question, and it's not being answered correctly. And if it's not answered correctly, it will destroy the monetary system. Turk's response, well, I don't object to bimetallism per se. In the past, bimetallism has been implemented by government fixing the ratio between the two metals. Government price fixing in any form never works. And that's been the problem with governments, fixing bimetallism ratios. Now, if we have two different metals circulating freely without the government fixing their exchange rate, I could live with that, the money changer. Well, I completely concur, but it's interesting that the founding fathers did not create a monometallic monetary system. Looking at our Constitution and later enactments, like the Coinage Act of 1792, the Coinage Act of 1834, 1837 and 1849, you see that they made the silver dollar the standard coin with gold eagles valued in silver dollars. And they never intended that gold and silver, the gold-silver ratio, to remain fixed at that rate forever, but to be adjusted to changes in the market. They only fixed it in accord with the technology available at that time and intended for the ratio to be adjusted periodically. And they made silver the standard with gold coins adjustable in weight according to how the ratio rose or fell. Turk's response, but governments were never in a position to understand that the market already understands. So even with an adjustable ratio, the market will always move ahead of the government. Money changer, I believe you're right. But today, of course, with the communications capability to transmit value changes around the world instantaneously, there's no reason why you couldn't use both gold and silver, because the market will be constantly iterating toward a current ratio. And that fits in rather well to your definition of money as a means of communication. Turk's response, well, there will always be a ratio, because in the free marketplace, people will always be exchanging between gold and silver. My only complaint is with government and government fixing that ratio. That's what I object to. All right, the dollar's coming collapse. There's the story. We're going to have to cut it off right there. Remember that these politically incorrect opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. And they do not necessarily represent the beliefs and opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, staff, or the management of this network or of this radio station. For more information about the Law Hour and the editorial review, please go to my website. That's georgegordon.org, or call the Law School direct at 417-273-4967. All right, you've been listening to the Law Hour and editorial review sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. For more information about the Gordon Law School and the Law Hour, please go to the website georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour is carried worldwide on the Internet, and all of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date. The Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. The Law Hour brings you timely reports on law, science, education, politics, religion, news, and current events 7 days a week. Well, there's the signal. It says my time's up. We'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station, God willing. So until then, good night, friends.